All right. Welcome back, Seattle, to another episode of The Money Seat with me, your host, Ross Krause, certified financial planner here, helping to solve the world's financial literacy problems one episode at a time. If you're not familiar with the show, my name is Ross. I'm a CFP. I help people with financial planning, really anything related to finance, money, the market. You call in, you text in, you email in, and I'll answer your questions here live on air without seeing them first, hence why I am putting myself on the money seat here. If you haven't heard any of the episodes, need a refresher, go to 1150kknw.com, listen to the pilot, listen to any previous ones. If you want to ask a question, if you want to submit a question, really, you could go to my website at rosskrause.com, and you could call in at 425-373-5527. That's 425-373-5527. And today we actually have a in-person guest, Stacy of Stacy Connects, who likes to come in every, feels like every quarter, just randomly.
Well, you know, I'd like to keep you on your toes.
Yes. So Stacy's going to be here to ask me some questions that hopefully are, well, we cover so much stuff, but I have a pretty good feeling this is going to be new and different and relevant to her and her kids today.
Okay. Maybe I come in once a quarter to get financial advice.
Yes.
Well, and that's exactly why people should be contacting you, because it's an opportunity.
And it's free.
And it's free.
It's free, free financial
exactly.
advice.
Exactly. This is like a this is like a free trial.
Yeah, which I greatly undercharge my services. Free is obviously undercharging, but even my regular services, I have been working with people who are financial professionals and are very upset with my low fees that I charge people. So even if you do want to pay for my advice, it's still going to be cheaper.
It is so very reasonable.
Take advantage of it. This stuff out there is very expensive, just like lawyers and accountants and stuff. Fortunately, that advice is worth it, but expensive. So you're smart to come in and take advantage of these things. And so I guess, like I always say every week, this goes by so quickly, so we should probably just start.
Let's do it.
What you got? Yeah.
Okay. So first, because in some ways I'm the gatekeeper of a lot of the questions that we get, and they filter through and I collect them, first I want to follow up on some hot takes.
Awesome.
Okay. So one of them, Will, you've had on the show a couple times. Will's my son. He is 22.
Yes.
He is very interested in finance. He's in a financial rotation program at ServiceNow. So he and his father go back and forth on the whole saving for retirement thing. So you work with Will, as I said, mm-hmm. and Will is really aggressive about, like, let me max out my retirement and let me do all these things. Now, my husband, Pete, is like, what are you doing that for? Why are you being a knucklehead? Like, you've got so many years to work. Why are you putting so much money away? So I'm on the side of, well, you got nothing going on, as in a girlfriend or a house or whatever.
Right, exactly.
Why not? You can always adjust, right?
Yes. Yes. So it is interesting, because a lot of the stuff we talk about, there isn't necessarily with money and finances, there isn't this, like, it's not math where 1 + 1 = 2. You can't argue that. There's no other ways to do things. Investments and financial planning, this stuff is not, it doesn't work like that. The best way to say this is there's a lot of different paths to take to get to the end destination.
Uh-huh.
So what your husband is saying works fine.
For him.
For him. And also, if you're going to be disciplined later in life to then catch up, put more money in, make up for the lost time. The problem with that is that's way easier said than done.
Mm-hmm.
It's a lot easier to start now, stop, and then at least you have some momentum, you have some stuff going, or to do a lot now, and then later on you don't have as much pressure or urgency to do it later because you don't know what your situation is. So generally, is he knows where the situation is now. So take advantage of that, because you don't know what it'll be in the future.
Well, and interestingly, I would add a couple things to that. One, it shows the importance of actually working with a financial planner that knows you and your habits.
Right.
So Will, I love him dearly, He's a cheap bastard. He does not want to spend his money. He's a saver.
Okay.
He like shops with his eyes. He rarely pulls the trigger on any big expenses.
Okay.
And so whereas Pete, you know, he graduated from college in 88 and went and lived in Manhattan. He spent his money like it was water.
Yeah.
And so I also think it shows the difference between personality types, right?
Yes.
So the advice that you gave Will is really custom to him and how
yes,
he's living.
Absolutely. If it was the personalities were reversed, it would be different advice because you'd have to tailor it to the person. If you know that they're, you know, you could kind of work a little bit outside them and train them and teach them a few things, but people are who they are. And so if you give them advice that doesn't fit their personality, you're not doing them any good, and they're not going to stick to it, and it's almost not their fault. It's actually your fault for giving them those advice if that's not how it's going to work.
Right.
So it's funny. Yeah, your husband's kind of telling your son, and everyone does, I think parents do this a lot, of what he would be doing or what they would recommend, but Will's different. And so Will needs to do what is best for Will and how his personality works and what he feels safest and comfortable doing. And it sounds like if he doesn't have a lavish, crazy 20s, then he'll be fine. Right. He's not going to regret. Hopefully he's not going to regret that.
No. And he, you know, he picks the things he really wants to do. And I think that's another point. One of the reasons why I was so excited for this show to come on the air is you talk about the whole financial literacy thing.
Right.
And the few parents that do talk to their kids tend to guide them and say, well, this is what we did.
Right. Yeah. Because that's all they know. That's the best they can do, which
and
is
that's
normal.
Generationally different.
Yeah.
And it's also, as we see in this example, different personalities.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, that's how it's all about habits. It's just like with, I do say with dieting or exercising or stuff, it still has to be tailored a little bit to you and your personality and what you're like. Finances and investing and planning and saving has to be tailored to your personality. Hence why it's so important to work with someone who knows you and not just a computer algorithm or someone who could spit out numbers and give you general advice when they don't know you and your situation, which I, once again, I know we talk about every week, but it's because that's the most important thing about this. And if you're not doing a plan based on that, then your plan's going to fail. So yeah, it's all about your personality. It's crazy because everyone's so different. It's so different. And everyone has such different goals. I could go on and on about that, but yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I mean, even you also work with Annie, and Annie, so, you know, she's a special ed high school teacher, and she doesn't make a lot of money unless she gets her master's. She won't see a significant pay bump for a while, frankly, if ever, which, you know, shout out to all of our overworked and underpaid teachers out there. And so in her case, what's interesting is she is a spender. And so for her, it becomes about, it seems like, the habit of pulling things back and really trying to live within her means so that she can secure her own future since, you know, no one else is going to do it for her.
Right. So, for instance, if both of them went and watched some generic video on YouTube or whatever about, you know, general investment or retirement planning basics.
Right. For, like, people in their early 20s.
Will would probably be like, okay, this makes sense. I could look up some of these numbers and start putting money away. But your daughter would
cry and go into a fetal position.
And it would make everything worse. And she would end up maybe spending more, whatever we do to, so it would be the same thing with the same information that two people would probably take. And there's nothing wrong with it. It's just two people would take it differently and their actions would be different. Also, so therefore when you're working with those people, talking to them, you have to realize who they are and then tailor a strategy for one person, which might need either more hand-holding or more explaining or a much slower process, and one person where you could hit the ground running and probably go much bigger and more aggressive than what that video would say. So Will would watch it and probably not do enough.
Right.
And Annie would watch it and do nothing. And in reality, they both should be doing something, but it should be done very differently, and you have to just get it out of them. So that's kind of my point about that. And then there could be a third personality, and we could go on and on and on.
Right. Yeah. Love that. Okay. So that was one hot take.
Okay.
Then last week you talked about real estate investments.
Yeah. And my least favorite thing. Yeah.
That came from somebody who's actually an interior designer and decorator.
Yes.
So she was not thrilled with your response.
I didn't think she would be. Yeah. Yeah.
So she was like, what? You know, don't let anybody hear this episode. Like, her whole thing is, you know, with the market the way that it is, the housing market, she's like, you know, a dip is, I'm sure, on the horizon. And so you should, you know, slowly work on your house and get it up so that when you're like, get it up to speed or updates or whatever, so that you can A, enjoy it, and B, be thinking about resale and not have to do everything all at once. So she was like, what do you mean it's not your biggest investment?
It shouldn't be, yeah. But so is there a specific gripe? Or
no, no, just it's just an overall
yeah,
gripe.
Yeah, okay, I wasn't sure if I needed to address it.
Yeah, no.
Yeah.
She just was like, I respectfully disagree.
Yeah,
and
there's
nothing
wrong with that, yeah.
I also think it is interesting because growing up, that is the message that
yes.
my generation has been given.
Right.
Is
yeah.
that, like, your home is your single biggest asset.
I think I talked about that on the show last week, and that's a generational thing, but now it's not, and it shouldn't be. Like I said, if you did it right, your biggest asset should be your 401k or your retirement plan. It should be. If you didn't do it right, like I said, you know.
If you didn't do it right yet.
Yet.
Growth mindset.
Right, and you don't want all your money in you don't want your biggest asset to be your, and maybe this is why I should expound why you wouldn't want it to be your biggest asset to be in your home and real estate.
Yes.
And there's a few issues with it. The biggest one is liquidity. People who are retiring or older or at that age need liquidity, right? The whole point of view is that when you retire, you don't have income anymore. So you're reliant on a source of income, which, sorry, Social Security won't be enough for most people.
Right. Pensions?
Yeah, to get money from. And pensions really don't exist anymore, let's be honest.
Some
people have them. But even with that, that's a very small minority of people. The vast majority of people, a pension, whatever, annuities, annuities, we'll throw that in there, and Social Security still isn't enough to live on. So you need money. And it has to be, I mean, you're going to need a lot. You have things to do. If you're retiring
right.
in your 60s or 70s, you're moving, right? It's not like our parents, who might have been a little older, you know, 70 is the new 50, and that is true.
Right.
And so you're active, you're moving, you need liquidity. It's the most important thing. So what's the historically worst problem with real estate as an investment?
Well, I mean, Murphy's Law would dictate that when you're ready to sell your home, no one's ready to buy it.
Because it's not liquid, right? Right now, if I said, oh man, Apple's up, I'm going to sell it, I press a button, I sell it for exactly what that is, and I get it tomorrow. Yeah, I'm imagining going through the process of real, it just doesn't work like that. And in the meantime, so then you're like, say, well, maybe we could, you know, borrow or mortgage it out, which isn't great because then you're taking on debt in retirement, which has its own issues.
Mm-hmm.
So from a retirement and income point of view, it's not great because yes, it has value, but how are you getting that value? What are you just taking another mortgage and using that cash? Matt, that's not great. And then if you don't sell it, well, that's great. You have a $1 million house, but if you can't use it to spend on things, then it's not really helping you, right?
Right.
So then the second part is it's not great for inheritance. If you had one kid, then a house and real estate is fine. But it's much better off if you have 2, 3, 4, 5 kids. People can't split houses. They most likely sell it. It's much better to pass on assets, cash, life insurance, stuff that's very easy to split, to move to someone else. You don't have to worry about geography and stuff like that as well. So those are two of the reasons, just for that reason, why it shouldn't be your biggest thing.
So then what about setting up a trust?
Yes.
So if you set up a trust and then the idea is that, you know, you sell the house goes into the trust, and then, you know, the beneficiary, let's say one significant other passes before the other, then it goes to them, and
right.
then at such and such a pay, like, is that all part of financial planning, estate planning, or are they together?
Yeah, they're together. So it's part of financial planning, and then financial planning will consist of estate planning, investment planning, retirement planning, risk management, tax management, and estate planning. So like six things. Yes. So that's a portion of it, which is why it's important to do all those. And how it fits
right.
together, yes. But I do have one more comment about that, too, because the real estate thing.
Mm-hmm.
So I kind of addressed about why it shouldn't be your biggest asset and why it's really not great if it is, based on retirement. But two, in terms of the investment side, you know, let's again, people, there are ways, and I know people, right, who make money and they buy and they sell and they flip things short term.
Right.
But that's not what I was bringing up, right? I want to make it very clear. I'm talking about your primary residence that
right.
you live in. Yes. And also for people who are maybe beginners or not experts on this. You know, if you know what you're doing and you've done this a lot, I understand it could be a good investment to buy this property, interior design, make it great, whatever they do on HGTV, and sell it in 3 to 6 months and make more money than you would in the market. I get that. But that's not for everyone. And it could get you into more harm than good. But in terms of your primary residence, I still think you should always look at it as your residence, where you live. And everything you do should be from a enjoyment view, not from a investment or to make money from it. Mm-hmm. That should be a secondary thing from your primary residence. Keep in mind, everyone, I've said primary residence many times.
I would agree with that. Yeah. I have found that something that I notice, and both my husband and I, our parents always bought homes that were within their means and thought of it as a next step.
Yes.
They never bought a house like, this is it. This is going to be my forever home. And it's interesting how many people, when you watch these shows, right?
Yeah.
That are like, this is going to be great. And someday when we have kids, we can like blow out this wall and we can do this. I'm like, why are you worrying about someday? Like, you know, it's kind of like
yes.
the horizons, right? So it's like you need to think about now. And then your next horizon is like where you're going to be like a year from now and then 3 years from now. It's interesting to me when people are thinking like their horizons are like 5, 15, and 25 years. And it's like, I don't want to be in the same house for that long.
Right.
We've been in our house here in Seattle for 15 years and I am twitchy because in the first 5 years that we were married, it'll be 30 in June, we lived in 5 different houses.
Oh, wow.
So we moved as we, you know, were able to, our lives adjusted or the kids, you know, we kept having them and things like that. And we tried to do somewhat parallel moves financially.
Yeah.
That, you know, we took on a little bit more, we changed the neighborhood or, you know, whatever it was.
Yeah. And it's funny because real estate, you can't, like, it'd be so easy in life if you bought your place and you could just pick it up and move it to wherever else you want to go in life if you want. And then it would make the whole investing in it a little bit more profitable and make more sense.
Right.
But because, like I said, it's a physical building that you have to sell that takes a while to sell it, investments makes it a little more, you know, complicated. My parents, I know my friends, bought starter homes and then would do it themselves and fix things up and add things to it. None of that was done from an investment point of view. It was all done because they needed the space. They wanted
right.
to
they
grow.
They hated the green
yeah.
paint. And
yes.
they like wanted the carpet off the stairs.
Yeah.
And yeah.
So, and that's why we need, personally, that's why I think we need interior designers. Because it's for your own aesthetic purposes. I think if you're just buying the, or sometimes you already know you want to sell it. And then you've made that decision. And then you need someone to maybe fix it up and look nice. I get that. But otherwise,
right.
it shouldn't be a, huh. If I actually put $50,000 in this and fixed it up and then sold it for $100,000, I could get some money and then we can move somewhere else. I would hope you've already decided you want to move. I hope that that's not spurning all these other decisions
right.
because that's what I think is could go down a bad road. Who knows what's going on? It's not the best mindset for
well,
that
and
money.
It costs so much money to move. Yes.
So that's my response. I do appreciate pushback. I always think that there's always different opinions to all this stuff. And I'm sure mm-hmm. there are people who've had a lot of success and made a lot of money. And good for you. Keep doing that. But just, you know, make sure you have a well-diversified portfolio of other assets and other things you could count on when you get to that age.
And I will say one of the things that you could argue that supports both philosophies is that from your standpoint, the financial investment is not necessarily worth that return on investment. From her standpoint, investing, as you say, invest because you want a nicer oven. Invest because you cook or invest
right,
because,
yeah,
like,
exactly.
you know, you are like, if I take down this wall, it's going to open up the whole space.
Yeah. Yes.
And take advantage of it.
Yes. The open concept, whatever that brings you personal joy. That should be your primary motivation for these.
There
so,
we go.
Yes.
Okay.
Which is, once again, very important, by the way. Not belittling it. Just it shouldn't be a primary concern about making money. It should be your personal enjoyment.
Yeah. No, okay. I'm down with that. Okay. Next question.
Yes.
I speak for women everywhere that perhaps took a more traditional role where maybe their significant other is off in the workplace doing that the traditional grind. They stayed at home and raised their kids. And you talk about investment, retirement, and those kinds of things. So, and actually, it doesn't have to be women. So I speak for everyone out there who takes on the role and puts their career to the side.
Right, who's not the breadwinner in the relationship.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And who's kind of taking care of the home front. And what do you recommend that they do?
Yeah, so one, historically, it has been women. And if it's women in that case, it's actually more important that they take on some financial knowledge and literacy because women live longer. On average, they're younger than their significant other, meaning they're going to be spending, once again, we don't always talk about pleasant topics, but 5, 10, 15 years alone at the end with all the money when it's the most, right?
This is my mother.
Yes, it's very common. And so there are so many women, so many, who have a recently deceased spouse who was primarily breadwinner and handling all this stuff. And they are gone, and they have a, can't say everything on air, but a buttload of money, and they don't know what to do with it, and they need help. And one, unfortunately, that's one of the most vulnerable populations where people take advantage of you.
Yes.
And you know, not saying everyone will, but literally, there are people. I'm not the only one who knows this. There are people who know this and preys on this. And two, especially because they're also lonely, and it's a whole thing. It's very sad. And second, you want to know what you're doing. So if you're talking to people, you need to have that some background knowledge. So you really want to educate yourself a little bit on your end, at least about, okay, do I at least know how to do a budget? Do I know what I'm spending? Can I track some of this stuff?
Well, and I'm even going to go more basic.
Okay. Yeah.
Like, I'm going to go as basic as, do you know where your money is? Do you know what the password is? Do you know the website
of
your investments? Because, you know, I think about in my parents' case, my dad this year will mark 10 years since he died. And so the good news is, that's kind of a weird thing to say, he was sick for a little while. So my mom was able to kind of get her ducks in a row.
Okay, that's,
which, you know,
from
not,
that point of view, yes, that is good.
Right.
Yeah.
So most people don't have that. And
right.
So finding a way to, like, you know, where is your money? Is
yes.
there money in a mattress? Is it in an
yeah.
IRA? Is it, like, where is your stuff?
Yeah, make sure you have an accounting of that. It should be a pretty easy conversation with your current spouse for that or significant other. Because, yeah, you're right. You won't be able to do anything if you don't know where that is. I would even say know what the difference is with, you know, cash in the bank versus an investment like in a retirement account, and just know the differences and know what a stock is or a bond is, or just kind of some basic investment stuff. And then also maybe network or see if there's other people in the community in a similar situation. It wouldn't be bad to do some research on your end. If you have an advisor, there might be. I used to have a few clients who only the husband or only the one person would come in and the other person would never even be involved. So if that's you and you do have a significant other and they do have an advisor that you're working with, you need to be involved in that relationship.
Well, I go,
as
but
well.
My eyes sort of glaze over and I eat candy.
Okay. So
I'm there.
Yeah.
And like every once in a while, like, you know,
well,
I get hit with the electric prod.
I can't force you to pay attention. And if it is, then yeah, well. And sometimes there are significant others who have different advisors, and sometimes they have the same one. But generally, you need to take an active role in that. Ask questions. Be involved. Know what decisions are being made. And
I should have my own life insurance, yes?
Yeah.
You know, interestingly, it's fascinating to hear how many women don't get it. And we actually got mine early on because Pete was like, okay, if something happens to you, it would help pay for the myriad of people
yeah.
that he would need to pay in order to fill in my
well,
role.
Let me go a step further, because that's actually very unlikely to happen. What's more likely to happen is the more glossed over and more ignored scenario, which is your very high earning significant other gets disabled and no longer brings that income in, and his work or whatever disability pays him 40 or 50 or 60% of his income, and you can't live on that because it's taxed by the government and you're not in there. So, and then the significant other or spouse has to go to work, has to cut a lifestyle, has to sell their house, possibly at a loss because they were planning on it because it's not liquid.
Like throwing it all out there.
I am going to throw it out there. But that's there. I don't know. It's 3 to 1 more likely that it's some type of disability, mental, cancer, whatever, Alzheimer's, whatever, than it is a death. That's much less likely than it is a disability. And people don't prepare for that. And so what happens is, you know, if you're making 100, 150, disability might not be as necessary to fill in the gaps. But if you're making 250, 400, 500, 40% of that is huge.
Right.
And you need to be
accustomed to that life.
So that's why you need to have I've had these conversations. We had an even higher earner, a lawyer making $1 million a year, and the spouse was in there, and maybe she had ulterior motives. It was a whole thing. But it was basically like, what happens to me if something happens to him? And we went over all the scenarios. And at the end, it's like, okay, you're getting that insurance, and you're getting that disability, and you're getting this, and you're getting that. So those are the conversations you have to have with your significant other. Hey, if something happens to you, what's in place? How am I protected? This isn't necessarily like no one's going to off you, or it's not right. It's not going to do anything malicious, but you need to know what those scenarios are, because then it happens, and it generally happens suddenly, and then it's too late. It's too late. You can't get insurance or disability. So those are hugely important things that you have to do. I talked about what happens after they're gone.
Right.
But now we need to discuss about while they're still here, especially if there's an age discrepancy or if they're a very high earner. You need to go over all that as well. And I realize we're out of time.
All right. Well, if people have questions,
every week this
they
happens.
Really, you really, really, really need to reach out to Ross.
That's true.
Especially that one scenario. It seems a little sus, I'm not going to lie. So remind people how they can get in contact with you.
Yes. So I'm at rosskraus.com, and you could submit a question or just submit a query and set up a meeting with me through then. You could also email me at ross.kraus@lpl.com. I'm R-O-S-S-K-R-A-U-S-E, R-O-S-S-K-R-A-U-S-E. And I'm at 847-501-1538. Thanks again very much, Stacy, for being here, and we'll see you next week.
Securities offered through LPL Financial, member FINRA SIPC. The opinions voiced in this podcast are for general information only and are not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any individual. To determine which strategies or investments may be suitable for you, consult the appropriate qualified professionals prior to making a decision. All performance referenced is historical and is no guarantee of future results. All indices are unmanaged and may not be invested into directly. Economic forecasts set forth may not develop as predicted, and there can be no guarantee that strategies promoted will be successful.